Hello, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. Today we're going to talk college basketball, American Athletic Conference basketball with Mike O'Donnell. Mike is a college basketball analyst for ESPN and for CBS Sports. He played at UCF from 2005 to 2008, and then later worked as director of operations for the Knights alongside Donnie Jones, who was an assistant coach here at Wichita State. Mike, so you said you were at the football game. It was a late night at the Bounce House, but UCF came back and won. What was the atmosphere like for that? That was a big game, and they kind of saved the conference last night. I think that was the only football win the AAC had.
Pretty wild atmosphere, Paul. I've been fortunate enough to go to a lot of UCF football games, and I think the closest pregame atmosphere I could compare it to was when UCF opened with Texas for the first time with their new football stadium back in 2007. It was kind of like, you know, people hadn't been to a college football game in a decade and had been just dying to do anything kind of somewhat normal. And it was, we've all kind of had a very frustrating and emotionally struggling couple years. So I think it was really nice for everybody to be outside, just yelling, screaming, for college football. It was good to have college football back. And that's a fun game. Even if you're just a generic college football fan, you know, Thursday night, UCF and Boise State, that's a fun game to tune into. So even though it got pushed back later, it ended up being just a really awesome game.
Yeah, UCF football has been fun to watch from afar, kind of like Boise State. How have they gone about creating that atmosphere, that kind of a football feel that seems to be really fun to be a part of?
You know, everything really changed when UCF committed to the resources to build an on-campus football stadium. For a very long time, UCF was playing in what used to be called the Citrus Bowl. It's an old, very big a football stadium in downtown Orlando. So there was for most students and people who lived around UCF, about a 25-30 minute drive. Now that's nothing bad, but there's something different about committing the resources to building an on-campus football stadium, and that totally changed, in my opinion, the trajectory of the program. The win over Baylor in the Fiesta Bowl years ago under George O'Leary really kind of cemented a consistent approach to winning. And then when Scott Frost came in, you went from old school George O'Leary, you know, line up, we're going to run it 3 or 4 yards at a time and just wear you down, to air it out, we're going to go absolutely crazy and open with Scott Frost. And the fans and alumni really took to the, I guess, more open style of play. And then that continued. And I think the energy has been really pretty spectacular since Gus Malzahn has been announced as the head coach. And always, and you know this, Paul, always helps as a new coach when you win the first game, you know?
Definitely, definitely. All right, I took a detour into football. Let's get back to basketball. So last season in the American, Houston in the Final Four, huge deal for the conference. Wichita State, at-large bid, lost a disappointing game to Drake. Memphis won the NIT. So what's your big picture view of the American? How strong is the conference, maybe measured by the ability to get those NCAA at-large bids?
It's a great question. I think moving forward, the American should be at least a four-team bid league. For the last really 4 years, Houston's been holding the flag for the American Conference in terms of consistency and winning, especially in the NCAA tournament. The next is Wichita State, obviously. And it really kind of has been missing that other kind of top-tier brand. And it needed to be Memphis just because of, you know, this, Paul, the history of Memphis basketball goes a really long way. It goes far back, and there's been such a great consistency of winning. But if you looked at the last really 6 or 7 years, it hasn't been up to where I think Memphis fans would echo this. It hasn't been up to the level of where they would want it to be. So if you've got, in my opinion, you know, with Houston, Wichita State, and Memphis, those three teams will always be either in the top 25 or receiving votes in the top 25. it's kind of, those are your three flag bearers for the conference right now, if we're talking just specifically basketball. Then there's those two or three other teams that are right behind that three that that I believe would almost essentially rotate, you know, almost every other year. And that's Cincinnati, UCF, and SMU. And those three teams can really add into the consistency of where I think, you know, it might take some time for Cincinnati to get back. I don't think it's going to be too long. I thought the hire by Wes Miller was a fantastic hire for Cincinnati. But when you've got Houston, Wichita State, Memphis, and Cincinnati consistently making the tournament, that allows you two or three other teams of UCF, SMU, you know, potentially South Florida and Tulsa to search for that fifth, sixth seed, which you're going to be on the bubble if you have a consistency of that. What's really kind of the rhetoric around the American Conference has kind of hurt the American Conference in that everybody talks about how once you get into the season, the regular season, the American Conference will cannibalize itself because it's so physical and it's every team in the league is so good defensively that there's no guaranteed win in the conference. But, you know, critics will say it just cannibalizes itself. There's not enough consistency. And where the American Conference needs to save itself from that rhetoric is in non-conference play. Houston has done a really good job in the last couple of years of getting big non-conference wins. Wichita State, Memphis, and Cincinnati need to do a better job of winning big non-conference games. Because if you're able to have one or two, you know, a one or two signature non-conference wins, right? Quadrant one wins. And then you level that into four or five teams doing that. Well, it becomes less about a conversation of the American Conference cannibalizing itself in the regular season and more conversation about how tough and great and deep the American Conference is. But that doesn't happen unless the Memphis, Wichita State, Cincinnati's of the conference have to win games, have to have one or two signature wins in the non-conference to kind of change that rhetoric. And then in turn, when you change that rhetoric, winning usually follows suit and more bids follow.
No question. Got to get those quad one wins. Memphis dominated the summer news, as you alluded to. You know, they hired Larry Brown and Rasheed Wallace as assistant coaches, and that wasn't even close to the biggest developments of the summer. I guess they have the nation's best recruiting class, center Jalen Duren, Imani Bates, which I think can play some guard, play some wing, and those are just two great additions. Are the Tigers, are they the conference favorite now?
They are, certainly on paper. You know, Coach Penny Hardaway talked about when he got to Memphis, he wanted all the smoke. And he's had good recruiting classes, but now he has the number one recruiting class in the country. You got the talent. You've got NBA draft picks. You got potentially two lottery picks in the next NBA draft. It's time to win right now. It's time to win the NCAA tournament. I think one thing that a lot of people lose focus on when talking about Memphis is not just the conversation around Penny on if he can coach. He absolutely can coach. If you picked up the phone and called Kelvin Sampson right now, Kelvin Sampson would tell you the most difficult team we played against last season was the Memphis Tigers. He said, because the way Memphis played in the last 10 games of the season, you saw it, Paul, there wasn't a team in the country that wanted to play against that press. That 40 minutes full court press, it was maddening to scout against and play against. But when you have all the talent, it's now time to not just get to the NCAA tournament, but win and advance in the NCAA tournament. And they have the player that could be freshman of the year in the conference and compete for player of the year in the conference in Imani Bates. So on paper, it looks as if Memphis is back. You've got to actually produce to do that. Going back to my previous comment on the thing that we're not talking about enough about Memphis is they're coming off winning the NIT. I thought that was huge for them. They started off the season really rocky. They completely changed their essentially, they changed their offense and they changed their defense about 12, 13 games into the season. And that's hard to do. Any coach in the country would say, like, nobody wants to do that. But Coach Hardaway felt that they could do that. And when they did, they got way better every single game and took a lot of steps. Alex Lomax was a huge key for the growth of the Memphis Tigers last season. But if you have consistency, a culture of winning coming off the NIT, those are great building blocks for a team. And now you add in lottery picks to this team. The biggest question mark is not talent. It's not depth. It's going to be point guard play. Can Memphis figure out who is and what can be the most efficient point guard system for the Tigers to actually maybe alleviate some of the offensive frustrations that a lot of Memphis Tiger fans saw last season?
Yeah, good point. I think point guard is the question for them. I'm not sure Alex Lomax is a good player. Not sure he's maybe enough of an offensive threat to be out there. As you mentioned, their defense, they finished number one in the KenPom rankings in defense. And I'd also be remiss, I didn't mention they've got a lot of returning guys back, Lester Quinones, DeAndre Williams, to kind of supplement.
Landers Nolley, who's one of the most efficient scorers in the conference. Yeah, he's going to benefit greatly from Jalen Duren and Monty Betts, who are going to be there's going to be so much defensive focus on that. I actually wouldn't be surprised if Landers Nolley led the Memphis Tigers in scoring next season.
Yeah, so that's kind of an ideal situation. You've got those two highly talented freshmen, you've got a really, really good supporting class. Were you a Penny Hardaway fan growing up? Did you have a Penny Hardaway jersey or poster in your room?
Well, I loved watching the Magic play. So I grew up in Florida, the west coast of Florida in the Pinellas County, Largo, Clearwater area. And, you know, the closest professional basketball team was the Orlando Magic. And they really, you know, right when I was getting into basketball, it was kind of right when the Magic were really created. And so, yeah, my favorite uniform is those blue or black pinstripe old Orlando Magic jerseys. And those teams they were fun to watch. But if you go back and if you look at statistically and their record, they were the team that the Bulls led by Michael Jordan had to beat for about three seasons in a row to get to the NBA Finals. And it was an absolute slugfest. It was Shaq and Penny, Dennis Scott, Horace Grant. Those were really fun teams to watch. Yeah, I loved watching Penny Hardaway.
Those pinstripe uniforms, that was a good look. The Houston Cougars, why such a consistent winner?
Kelvin Sampson. He has brought a stabilizing culture of team first, and it's been reflected in his recruiting. He's been able to he does two things exceptionally well. He gets seniors and upperclassmen to buy in on his team first vision, and simultaneously does a phenomenal job of developing basketball skill enhancements with freshmen and sophomores, which is why you see this consistency of you have seniors who buy in, then get the rest of the underclassmen to buy in. When the seniors leave, the underclassmen become the upperclassmen, carry that with them. They have an increased skill from their skill development program at Houston. And it's why they're able to not just necessarily keep a consistent base, but they don't necessarily reload. They just reorganize. They've done it some through the transfer portal, but they recruit guys that exactly fit their culture. And then they develop those guys that best fits their culture from a basketball skill standpoint. Kelvin Sampson is absolutely the reason. And he would tell you it's the players. You picked up the phone and gave him a call. But he's done a phenomenal job there from a consistent standpoint. You remember, Paul. You've been following this conference for a long time. Who thought Houston would be really good after losing a player like Rob Gray? And they totally found a way to create an even better three-point shooting system after Rob Gray left. And then those three seniors leave. And Armani Brooks leaves early. How can you possibly replace that trio? And lo and behold, you get even more consistency from guys that step up. They do it in a different way. They do it through offensive rebounding now. So it's been pretty impressive to watch.
Cougars have Marcus Sasser back and some transfers coming in. They should be very good again. Wichita State, Shockers won the conference regular season last year, made the NCAA tournament. What's the conference view of the Shockers and their expectations this season?
Well, I think most people view Wichita State as the third or fourth best team in the American Conference on paper. If you're just talking, you know, returning talent and what's on paper. And I have said this consistently since last season. Tyson Etienne is the most underappreciated scoring guard in the country. He is not just one of the best ISO scoring guards, but he is statistically one of the most efficient pick and roll scorers in college basketball. He was last season, according to Synergy Sports. And I'd like to see him be a better facilitator in the pick and roll, but I don't think there are five or six guys better than him at scoring the basketball in Wichita State's pick and roll offense. He is manipulative in a great way, in that he can read the hedge and help defense on the low side or the high side, depending on where the pick and roll is. And because of his consistent outside shot, you couple that with nobody talks about how strong he is. I think he's incredibly strong with the basketball, you know, kind of similar. He doesn't play like this, but similar to how Fred Van Fleet was very strong with the ball. He never got bumped off anywhere because he had such a strong base. But Tyson Etienne is just a much better scorer than Van Fleet. Different player, but he has that characteristic in that it's very difficult to guard him because of his quickness, number one, his intelligence, number two, but his strength, number three. And wouldn't surprise me if Tyson Etienne becomes American Conference Player of the Year again. But he's the key to the Shocker season, as well as the fact that he's back. I absolutely have Wichita State going back to the NCAA tournament. And then, you know, you've got to expect a really big year from Dexter Dennis, who I love watching. He's phenomenally bouncy. He's a great, he's tailor-made for the game of basketball, and that he's can be an electrifying three-point shooter, and he's a great athlete around the rim. The big key for Wichita State actually is defense. But I'm excited about the freshman, Kenny Poto. I'm really looking forward to watching him play. I had a chance to call one of his games in high school when he was playing against Montverde, and I was incredibly impressed with his feet, his hands. He caught everything. He was very decisive. His basketball IQ is through the roof. He's got great touch. He can shoot from the outside. He's a big guy that doesn't look fast, but he doesn't move slow. That's the best way I can describe him, is that I think he is people like to say deceptively athletic, and that gets overused. What that really means is someone just doesn't look like a freak athlete, but they move really well. And I think Kenny Poto moves really well. I think in the pick and roll between him and Tyson Etienne, it might take him a couple games, but the fact that he can pick and pop and he can finish well around the rim could be a pretty lethal combo for the Shockers this season.
Yeah, he's a kid I think could step into some playing time and be pretty important just with his size and shooting ability.
Well, if he ends up starting halfway through the season, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying he's going to, but it would, because of his IQ and the way that he plays, would not shock me at all.
Interesting. Wes Miller at Cincinnati, the new coach there. You mentioned him earlier. What do we expect from Wes Miller and the Bearcats?
I'm unsure, and I'm not being lazy when I say that. I think most people are still trying to figure out who this team is. I think the biggest question mark is, you know, I was hoping that Keith Williams would have stayed at Cincinnati, but he decided to transfer, and that would have provided, outside the fact that Keith Williams is an all-conference caliber player, he's an excellent talent, he's a great player, he would have provided some great consistency from a culture standpoint, from a locker room standpoint, because Wes Miller has had to bring in a lot of freshmen and transfers. So much rides on what Mikey Saunders is going to do. I saw flashes of him being really good, and then there were times where he was extremely quiet. And I think Wes Miller, being a former point guard, understanding that position extremely well, could benefit Mikey Saunders. I really believe that Saunders is the key to Cincinnati's season, in that if he can facilitate, take the reins, and go, push the pace, because we all saw the kind of teams that the kind of team that Wes Miller had at UNC Greensboro, play fast, play up tempo, a lot of possessions, and those guys played really hard. I think that really can kind of fit this team, and that they're not going to be big, but they are going to be fast, and they do have really solid guard play. It will just really kind of come down to the consistency and outside shooting and how they rebound the basketball on the defensive end will be a little bit of a question mark, but I don't think anybody doubts the coaching caliber of Wes Miller. I thought that was a fantastic hire by Cincinnati.
Yeah, as you mentioned, that's a program with such a great history that it's really important for the American, for Cincinnati to be doing good things. You are high on the Knights. What do you like about UCF and their prospects for this season?
Cautiously optimistic about UCF, and I think most people who follow the conference would say the same thing. And you have to use the word cautiously because they have essentially everybody back from last season's team. And last team was loaded with individual talent, but they were inconsistent, extremely inconsistent. And you start the season off, you beat Auburn, you beat Cincinnati, you beat Florida State at Florida State. And then there was a time where they lost 8 out of 10 games right in the middle of the season. And so, but if you look on paper, you have two all-conference players back in Darius Johnson. Darius Perry and Brandon Mahan. Darius Perry was second team all conference. Brandon Mahan was third team all conference. You return the conference's leading shot blocker and CJ Walker. And then you also return Isaiah Adams, who was on the all freshman team and tested the NBA waters this past summer. It's a loaded roster on paper. Whether or not this team is able to gel and play consistent, we're about to find out. This is the most talented team from a depth standpoint that Johnny Dawkins has ever had at UCF. That team that BJ Taylor, Taco Fall, Aubrey Dawkins team that won a game in the NCAA tournament, lost that heartbreaker to Duke in the second round. That team was the most talented team in the history of UCF, but they were only played about 6 guys. This UCF team can go 9 or 10 deep if they wanted to. They're very deep in the backcourt. They also brought back the second best shot blocker in the Mountain West Conference, transferred in from UNLV, Mbake Zhang. They have great shot blockers and rebounders. So much of it is really going to come down to a consistent effort. Where do shots come from? How do you manage a lot of talent? Is going to be the biggest key for the UCF Knights. If they do, this team certainly has enough talent to be the fourth best team in the American Conference and be in the NCAA tournament.
The last team I'll ask about is SMU, which I always have a hard time getting a read on. They always seem to be talented and really play a fun style of basketball. And last year, they only played 17 games. They did make the NIT. They've got Kendrick Davis back. I think he's just a fabulous player. They added a guard, Zach, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Nuttall, N-U-T-A-L-L. He was the Southland Player of the Year last year. What's your read on the Mustangs?
Potentially could be the best backcourt in the American Conference. Kendrick Davis Jr. was, for most of the season, led the country in assists and was one of the best assist turnover ratios in the American Conference. He is an exceptional guard. He is the second best guard in the American Conference behind Tyson Etienne. And in my opinion, Tyson and Kendrick are two of the top 15 point guards in the country. And him, Kendrick Davis Jr. coming back obviously is huge for the Mustangs. They lose some talent. They actually get tougher. And I agree with you in that it is hard to kind of figure this team out because it's that five out kind of spread open offense that there's a lot of freedom, which means it's very difficult to scout against. But if they're not consistent on defense, things have a tendency to get out of sorts for the Mustangs. But they've actually added two transfers, Marcus Weathers and Michael Weathers. One, Marcus Weathers, coming from Duquesne, is a tough, hard-nosed bruiser. The kind of guy that could be one of those under-radar guys that ends up getting third-team all-conference because of his ability to threaten to be a double-double type player every time he steps onto the court. He's a big physical presence, the guy who plays angry. And SMU, and you know, this SMU just hasn't had that kind of guy for a long time, maybe since Shemi Ojeleye years ago. The backcourt between Kendrick Davis Jr. and Zach Nuttall, who you alluded to, he was Southland Player of the Year at Sam Houston State, averaged 20 points a game. He dropped 32 on SMU in the second game of the season last season. He is a very efficient and very, very good scorer. And when you're able to add a great scorer to Kendrick Davis Jr., that takes scoring pressure off him. And it also takes less pressure off Zach Nuttall, who had a very high usage rate when the ball was in his hands. He did so much for Sam Houston State. He's not going to have to. He may not score 20 points a game, but he's still going to score 16, 17 points a game, and he's going to be even better on the defensive end. He's a good defensive player as well. So the backcourt is potentially could be the best in the American Conference, depending on how Zach Nuttall embraces the SMU Mustangs offensive system. But they've got physical toughness for the first time in a long time in Marcus Weathers and Michael Weathers transferring in that provide a lot of physicality and great rebounding presence for the Mustangs. They're going to be a team they're going to compete for that fourth spot, really between UCF and Cincinnati. That's that team that's going to compete for the fourth best team in the American Conference.
The Weathers they're twins, they're Kansans. They both went to Shawnee Mission North, so about three hours from Wichita. All right, the last question. Let's go back to 2006. Had name, image, and likeness legislation been adopted at the time you made all six of your three-pointers and scored 23 points in a win over UTEP? How would you have cashed in?
Oh, gosh. What a wonderful question. So I can't stand social media. It's a necessary evil, and I have to use it on Twitter. And it's a part of the process as a member of the media. It can be really fun, but also really exhausting. I got to be honest with you, Paul. I'm not much of a self-promoter, but if I had to pick one thing, you don't have these in Kansas, but all I would want is just a public sponsorship. I just want to go into Publix and have $50 to spend whatever I want in Publix every time I go in and get a Publix sub, a chicken tender sub, and I'd be good to go, happy as a clam.
Publix is a grocery store?
It's a grocery store. Yeah, they've got great subs. And I would tell you this is the dream, though, it wouldn't happen because I just wouldn't have had the type of brand needed for this. The dream situation would be sponsored by Lucasfilm, because I am a Star Wars geek to the point of where it's probably inappropriate. And my wife always yells at me for talking too much about it. But, oh, man, if I was sponsored by Publix and Lucasfilm, Paul, my life would be made.
That would be good. You can never talk too much about Star Wars.
There you go. Good man.
Rule. The other when I was looking through your game log, several of them jumped out, but one that I wanted to ask about, you took 16 three-pointers versus Marshall. were you late in the shot clock guy at that point for the Knights? I'm curious how you get up 16 three-pointers in a game.
That's a great question. It wasn't, I would tell you this, and I think my head coach would tell you this, I never went into any game planning to do something. The only thing I cared about was trying to manipulate the defense to my advantage, whether that was I made six threes or had 12 assists. That's really all I cared about. I can't believe you set me up with 16 threes, but I remember that game specifically in that there wasn't a guy in our team that came ready to play that day. And I was really, really frustrated with our effort, really frustrated. It just felt like we were going through the motions and nobody seemed to want to step up. And so I felt that I had to do something. And even if it was missing shots, I was a consistent enough three-point shooter to know that, you know, I wasn't worried about misses. I was just worried about, you know, replicating perfect form every time. I just did not want to lose to Marshall. So I said, we're just not going to do that. And I just try to, that's not my game at all, to take over games, that's what I tried to do because I was really fed up with our team's performance at the time.
Well, you were an excellent 3-point shooter. So if you're a shooter, you can shoot those shots some games, definitely. All right, Mike. Hey, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. And take yourself out to lunch at Publix as a reward. Thanks.
Anytime. Happy to hop on. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.